Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. Before I bring him on, I just want to remind everybody to get their tickets to Forbidden Knowledge NewsCon 2021. It's going to be April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th with 12 amazing presenters. Just go to forbiddenknowledge.news or click the link in the description to check out this year's awesome lineup and get your tickets today. Today, I want to welcome to the show Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. He has a doctorate in patristics from the University of Oxford and pursues research in physics, alternative history, and science, and all the strange stuff. His book, The Giza Death Star, was published in the spring of 2002 and was the first venture into alternative history and science, following a paradigm of researching the relationship between alternative history and science. He has followed with a stunning series of books. Dr. Farrell, welcome. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm okay. It's sinus season where I'm at.
So okay. Well,
I'm indulging in my favorite sinus relief.
yeah. It's always it whatever works for you, you know. But you know, I hope that gets better for you. And I want to welcome you. I've been looking forward to this. Your body of work and research is extremely impressive, and I've been wanting to have you on for a while. I thought tonight we could not only discuss our current dystopian state, but what may have led to this. Yeah. And, you know, where this could be going. What's, you know, and also what's up with the mainstream media, the UFO mania lately, where this all may lead us. It's a very interesting time we're in. We're seeing things that I never thought I'd see before. If I was in a coma for over a year and I woke up this year and I went into a coma before 2020, I think I was living in the strangest science fiction movie I've ever seen. But first,
or the Twilight Zone.
Or the Twilight Zone, either one. Now, for those of the audience that may not be familiar with you or your work, this is your first time on, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background and what got you started down your path.
Well, what got me started, quite literally, was my father was an engineer. And there were numerous conversations around the card table when I was growing up. You know, that's what people did. They'd play cards on Friday night. And their favorite card playing partners, he was the man that was part of that couple, was the engineer for one of the local television stations, the transmitter engineer. And so naturally, whenever they get together to play cards, these two engineers would start talking engineering stuff, you know, talking shop. And my father and he, I remember vividly, I don't remember how old I was, but I was fairly young at the time. My father and this other engineer, I remember vividly having this conversation about the Great Pyramid and all the engineering weirdness in it. So I kind of grew up with it, you know. I've always had a fascination for that sort of stuff. Even UFOs, you know, I go back, you mentioned UFOs in the media. When I was a boy, there was this comic book company called Whammo, and they would publish these great big, gigantic comic books. And I remember my dad bought me one of these Whammo comic books. It was nothing about UFOs, you know. It was just chock full of comic book presentations of famous UFO cases, and was fascinated. So that's what got me started. I never really turned. Conceived of it as turning into a career, but here I am.
Right. Excellent. Now, 2020 was quite a year, like I mentioned in the intro, especially when it comes to conspiracy theories. Now, many of these that have come out in the past year are completely off the wall and ridiculous, but they have many that have actually come true, many that you could actually verify that, yeah, this is something that's actually going on. Now, when it comes to the coronavirus and everything else that has happened as a result.
No conspiracy there. Nothing suspicious, of course not, going on there.
I would never think that. Of course not. But my question is, do you think there is a grand conspiracy at play or some type of psychological warfare operation against the people? Or are they using this coronavirus as just a convenient way to push through some agendas that were in the works, or is something completely different? I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Let's start with the last one. At the minimum, it's very clear that the powers that be, or as I like to call them, Mr. Globaloney, is using this as a crisis of opportunity to get several objectives, you know, accomplished in one fell swoop. From a social engineering standpoint, let's see how far we can make the sheep docile and compliant with a narrative that, you know, makes really no sense. You know, are we dealing with one virus or several? You know, I'm still kind of unclear about that. and then, you know, all the statistical anomalies that have accompanied this whole thing, you know, what are they counting as corona deaths? Well, it depends. So to me, at the minimum, Chris, it looks like we're dealing with a crisis of opportunity. And, you know, while everybody's misdirected towards COVID, what are they really doing? Well, they're indulging in this great financial reset. You know, they're trying to get everything to move to a digital currency. And I put quotation marks around currency as fast as they can. So, yeah, they're accomplishing a lot with this. And one of the biggest things that they've managed to accomplish with it is because of the lockdowns. And let's remember, that's a term used in prisons. You know? One of the biggest things they've managed to do is wipe out the middle class. They, you know, online retail sales have skyrocketed. In other words, the Amazons, the Jeff Bezoses, and so on have been making hand over fist dollars because of all of this, while at the same time they're driving out of business the mom and pop stores. So, you know, they've accomplished a great deal economically in terms of their great reset. But at a deeper level, I do suspect that there's a lot more going on with this that just does not, in my opinion, add up. One of the biggest things to me still is the fact that Professor Lieber at Harvard University, the chairman of the chemistry department there and an expert in nanotechnology, was arrested shortly after this planned scandemic broke out for having not disclosed financial ties to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And then after that happened, we come to find out that Fauci himself, that was a deliberate slip, I have to say, but that's what I think of the man. Oh, how many masks do we need? Well, 1, 2, maybe 5, you know, 15, you know, I saw a cartoon of him wearing a mask that was nothing but a pack of bologna. But anyway, perfect. Which I like, but anyway, come to find out he has had financial ties to that same institution in China. So yeah, now we have this mad rush with these vaccines that, as far as I can tell, are not like any other kind of vaccine we've ever seen before, with all the adverse reactions that are going along with them. So yeah, I think there's a deeper aspect of this that we have yet really to plumb. So I leave the door here to conspiracy wide open.
Yes, that's pretty much all you can do at this point. Now, you mentioned China. Do you think that they have a larger role to play in what's going on than may appear? Because, you know, at the beginning, everything was being blamed on China, horrific things, images were coming out of China, people dropping dead on the streets. And then, you know, it goes back and forth. No, it's not China. It's not a bioweapon. You know, what do you think China's role is in the grand scheme of things?
Well, in the grand, let me rephrase your question a bit, because I think in the grand scheme of things, that there was prior to this planned scamdemic, there was some sort of very covert war going on between China and presumably this country, perhaps other Western powers or what have you. And to me, the surest sign of that is the flooding that occurred in China, that got to the point that they were actually very, very concerned about the Three Gorges Dam. You know, that weather system just sort of parked itself in the Indian Ocean and didn't move And to me, that's a little suspicious, because I do believe we have weather manipulation technologies that are relatively, pardon me, relatively sophisticated. So this weather system parks itself there and just inundates China with massive rains. And of course, a lot of that rain feeds into the Yangtze River. So, you know, it may have been an example of covert weather manipulation warfare. And weather is a perfect way to wage a covert war, because, you know, oh, it wasn't us, it was simply an act of God. You know, it's kind of like the Katrina hurricane that goes zipping along about a decade or so, more than a decade ago, goes zipping along through the Gulf and then makes a right angle turn and plows, you know. Well, hurricanes don't do that, folks.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't. So, yeah, I've been thinking there's some sort of covert warfare that has been going on for a long time, and COVID may be just another chapter in it.
Right. And one of the big anomalies for me, even before 2020, was the Trump presidency, really, the whole thing. I've never been political. I've never really trusted politicians. I always had the idea that they were kind of both under a level of control, and it was just more of a puppet show than anything, but that's just my personal opinion. But Trump was kind of an anomaly to me, just because of things he would say, the things he would do, especially when it came to calling out the fake media and some of the things that were happening during the COVID fiasco. What are your thoughts on the Trump presidency? Was he some sort of controlled opposition, or was he a legit outsider that was trying to maybe change
things?
Well,
you know, Chris, I, in all honesty, I puzzle myself about that. And let me tell you why. I'm kind of like you. I'm very, I'm not so much politically agnostic, but politically fed up. So, you know, when Shrub the First ran for president in 1988, that was when I retired from voting. You know, to me, this, I have no use for the family. You know, a choice between him and Bill Clinton is, you know, which faction of the CIA do you want running things? So I went into voting retirement, and I did not vote in any election at any level until 2016, when Trump was running against Hillary. And it wasn't so much that I was a supporter of Trump, it's just that I knew that her getting in was a bad idea. And I also had the opinion at that time, Chris, that Trump may represent some faction of the American deep state that was truly, truly and deeply, and there's no other way to put it, pissed off. Because we had Obamacare come in, which gutted the casino business. People were not using whatever spending money that they had for things like that to go out and gamble. So you had that element of the deep state. Everybody knows that the casino business is deeply, deeply tied to the mob and so on and so forth. And I was thinking that Trump represented some sort of faction of that element. And again, with Trump, you had his personal associations with, you know, the original swamp creature, Roy Cohn. And, you know, Cohn goes all the way back to Senator McCarthy and knew where all of the bodies were buried. So I thought, well, maybe there's more going on here than meets the eye. Well, then once he gets into office, his appointments baffled me, because they were not the kind of appointments that you would see someone trying to combat the deep state or drain the swamp make. Case in point, William Barr. You know? If you know anything about that whole Clinton, Mena, Arkansas, Barry Seal, you know, drug running operation, William Barr is front and center in the middle of that. So it began to baffle me. And at this point, I can't honestly say that I'm maintaining that same position. I don't know what Trump was other than an anomaly.
Yes, he was definitely an anomaly. And something that kind of went along with that was the whole the QAnon Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a phenomenon or what you want to call it. I think personally it was some kind of strange psyop. I'm still can't put my finger on it.
I do too.
Yeah, but you know, that kind of went along with the Trump presidency, and towards the end it was just being used to not only demonize Trump but all his supporters. You know, if you're into this QAnon thing, you're a conspiracy theorist and you're a danger and you're a white supremacist and, you know, you're everything else that's dangerous to America. So, right. You know, they ended up using that towards the end, and that just kind of solidified that, yeah, this was probably some kind of psyop to get people divided and get people turned against anything that goes against the mainstream narrative, basically.
Well, it was a clever psyop in that it did two things. It, you know, with my background being in patristics, I tend to look at things for their theological or religious implications. And to me, the whole QAnon op right from the start was setting, you know, it was designed more or less as a kind of a religion. It created its own kind of cult. And the second thing it did is it made people tremendously passive. They didn't go out and do anything. They were too busy decoding the messages and trusting the plan. You know, well, if you're trusting the plan and sitting on your, you know what, eating popcorn, you're not doing anything. So I was very suspicious of it. It was another case of very clever social engineering. But I will say this about it. It also struck me at the time, looking at it, that whoever was behind it, number one, was a group. And number two, they had access to some very sophisticated computing power and some very sophisticated software algorithms to do some of the stuff that they were doing, because they would dribble out just enough truth to hook everybody on all the rest of the different disinformation. And to me, Chris, that smacks of an intelligence operation. So the way I view things, I think those well-intentioned people were just had, quite frankly.
And the way everything turned out, you know, towards the end with the election and Biden winning and the allegations of election fraud.
I would say
and,
Biden winning.
Yeah, Biden winning, exactly. And then the impeachment of Trump, and then Trump doesn't end up getting – it's all so strange. Even after the election, when you look at the Biden presidency, how everything is going, it's like some kind of strange, like Twilight Zone episode.
It is.
You don't hear anything negative anymore. We don't have a president to hate anymore. So everything that's coming out of the media is all one side now, because mainly of the censorship that occurred the past year. And that's only getting worse. I want to talk about that later, too. But as far as the election, you know, you just like you said, quote-unquote election, what do you think went on there? I mean, was this decided long before that we got to get this Trump out of here, or, you know, what do you think about it?
Well, I think, well, number one, in my opinion, the prima facie evidence of fraud is pretty well overwhelming. And I think there were massive amounts of it. Number two, to pull off that amount of fraud, they had to have planned it carefully, which evidently they did, because there are allegations, I think some of them are possibly true, that China was shipping in massive amounts of paper ballots and so on and so forth. We've seen the, in my opinion, overreaction of Dominion suing Sidney Powell. We had the case of servers in Germany, you know, being being raided. So to me, it's looking like there was a whole organized international effort to get him out of there, because everything else had failed. And the assassination route just simply wasn't available, because people wouldn't have bought it, quite frankly. You know, the magic bullet didn't sell too well after a decade. So, you know, they had to get him out of there. And to me, the evidence of the operation is in the fact that we now have, and I'm not going to mince words, we now have a senile daughter in the White House who doesn't know where he is, doesn't know what he's signing, who's simply there as a placeholder. And, you know, I call him Bidenenko because of his connections to the Ukraine and all of that mess. So we've got a very corrupt man who, on top of everything else, is a senile dotard. And that, to me, is just kind of the final icing on the cake, that this has all been some sort of show in terms of the opposition to Trump and so on and so forth. Mr. Globalone is firmly back in charge and is in a rush to get things done.
Yeah, and I can't see him lasting the whole presidency, honestly. And that could be part of the plan, too, to just have Kamala jump right in his place once he kicks the bucket. I don't know. I mean, that could be a big possibility.
Well, I think there's a strong possibility of it. But again, you know, she's just another placeholder. This administration is being run not out of the White House. And it's not being run out of the vice presidential residence either. It's being run from somewhere else. And they're just there to sign the papers.
Yeah. Now I want to cover some of the other agendas that are kind of unfolding right now. First, the one that nobody wants you talking about, the V word, but we can talk about it tonight because this is not going to be on the Draconian Censorship YouTube network. It's going to be on our podcast and a private platform. But we're going to talk about the vaccines a little bit because they rushed it out. There was no testing. It's obvious that this was a huge agenda to get this thing out to as many people as possible. And we, of course, have negative side effects already. We have a lot of people dying. I, unfortunately, have family members that are brainwashed and lining up to go and take this thing. And we, of course, don't know the long-term side effects. And on top of that, when you look at all the information that we've been getting from the CDC the past year, the flu disappeared. The numbers never added up the whole time. It was all about the deaths, people dying of coronavirus, but they could have died of anything, and it was labeled as coronavirus. So what do you think the vaccine agenda is? I've heard everything from genetic modification to some sort of depopulation agenda. I just think that there's something nefarious going on there to where they want all these people to get it. Bill Gates is like the cheerleader for this thing. He's had TED Talks in the past about eliminating the people's spiritual gene. I mean, this is it's terrifying to me. I'd like to get your thoughts on what do you think is happening with this?
All of the above. All of the above. One thing we have to remember about Mr. Globalone is that they like to stack operations. They like to stack objectives and deal with them in one fell swoop. I go back to the messenger RNA vaccine and to Dr. Charles Lieber and his connection to the Wuhan laboratory. When that connection came out, I went on record very early on that it was highly suspicious that you had an expert in nanotechnology being involved at some point in the research associated with that laboratory. And lo and behold, the next thing we know is we're hearing about messenger RNA vaccines. Now, this is a complete, for one thing, that's not a vaccine in any classical sense, what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is genetically modify a response in the immune system to respond and create antibodies to a virus that, you know, normally a smallpox virus, they used cowpox to inoculate people against smallpox because the two were so similar, the immune system. And, you know, that's the way classical vaccines would work. These are not vaccines in that sense. So there's another objective. And I suspect that it is likely, since they also don't want to label what's in their vaccines, I suspect it's likely that they want to sneak a little chip into everybody because, again, this is concurrent with the great financial reset. They want to create, quite literally, a beast economic system where in order to participate in it, you have to have their little, you know, mark or whatever. And they are pushing at the same time for everything to go to so-called digital currencies. Well, first of all, a digital currency is not a currency, because it can, the value of what's in your bank account or your blips can be modified at the push of a button. And oh, and if you're good boys and girls, oh looky looky, your currency is worth more than if you're bad little boys and girls. So they're trying to connect all of this to a social credit system such as we have in communist China. Let's remember. So yeah, I think they're trying to accomplish several objectives. And on top of this, we have all of these adverse reactions coming out. I've put papers up on my website from medical professionals that highly suspect that these vaccines, these mRNA vaccines, could lead to prion disease. In other words, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or otherwise known as mad cow. And these are just the, and you raised a very good point. These are just the reactions we're observing now. What are going to be the long-term health effects to the people that receive these things or to their offspring? And there are already studies indicating that these things, these so-called vaccines, can affect the fertility rate in women. And I do believe, if my memory serves me correctly, I saw a study where it's also affecting the sperm count in men. So, you know, it's affecting women's fertility, men's virility. So what else have we got down the line waiting for us? Neurological problems, reproduction problems, histamine reactions in some cases. So, you know, where is this going to end?
Yeah, we're already seeing the passports that they want to roll out.
Right, exactly. Exactly. You know, they're trying to clamp down on movement because of this. And the bottom line here, as you also indicated, the statistics simply do not bear out that this is anything near a pandemic. It isn't. It isn't. So, you know, it's as far as I'm concerned, it's another big fraud. This has been the year, you know, this year and last year has been the year of massive fraud, voter fraud, narrative fraud, epidemic fraud, financial fraud. And in other words, Mr. Globaloney's desperate.
Yes.
You know, that's the good thing to take away from this. If they're willing to go to this length and, you know, rip the mask off of themselves and exhibit what they really are and have always been, I would like to add, then it means they're in a very desperate spot.
Yes, they do seem very desperate. And one of the most frustrating things about all this is we have healthcare professionals, we have doctors, we have scientists, we have people coming out and talking about how dangerous this is and how people shouldn't be taking this. But immediately, they're canceled, they're fired, they're shut off, they lose their jobs, or even worse, you know, who knows what's happening to some of these people that are speaking up. And on top of that, we have enormous cancel culture right now that is out of control with the censorship. So you're only getting one side of information right now, unless you go deep searching on BitChute or some of these other platforms, and you have to really search for any alternative information these days. And that is a huge frustration for me, you know, that these professionals actually try to come out and then, poof, you don't hear from them anymore, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, the next step is just exactly what happened during World War II. You know, Nazi Germany made it a capital offense to listen to the BBC or to be caught listening to it. So, you know, they're on that road. And I've got bad news for it. There's just too many people that are going to turn into the BBC, so to speak. It's law. They've lost their ability to control everything. And it's going to bite them in the you know what, because they're going to try and go ahead with their plan, and they're in a hurry to do it. And the other thing we have to remember is when you're in a hurry, you make mistakes. You know, it's just, it goes with being human.
Yeah. How far do you think this cancel culture and censorship can go? I mean, I've nearly lost my channel a couple of times already to where I'm just not posting anything that's getting canceled anymore. Just, you know, normal stuff that they allow you to talk about. But everything, you know, we've had cartoon characters canceled this week. We've had Muppets, Pepe Le Pew. I mean, how far? And do you think that people are really getting offended over this? Or is this just their decision to cancel this because they're saying people are getting offended? You know, it's so hard to tell what, you know, gauge where people really stand nowadays.
Well, I think, I think most of it is they're saying people are offended or could be. And it's the problem with any form of progressivism is when is there enough progress? In other words, they've never stated a goal as to when this ends, nor can they, because it's the process itself that they're involved with that empowers them. So in other words, don't expect these people all of a sudden to turn over a new leaf and be open to discussion. They're not. And this is why you see all of these moves all over the West for secession of some sort. We see states in the United States passing nullification law after nullification law preemptively. You know, this. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're in a Harper's Ferry 2.0 moment here. You know, the parallels with the antebellum period prior to the war between the states in this country is astonishing. And somewhat frightening.
Well, on top of that, they're also pushing racial division through the
and
media.
They're pushing racial division. They're pushing sexual division. They're pushing demographic division. If you're, you know, old versus young, and on we could go. And again, this is, to me, this is a sign that the powers that be are very, very desperate. And that's why they're in a hurry. They need to get this planet locked down, and I just don't think they're going to be successful.
Right. And on top of all that, we have another agenda. We have this transhuman agenda, which personally, you know, I don't care. You can be a dog, you can be a cat, you can be a girl, boy, whatever. But it's the pushing of normalizing this agenda on mainstream society. It's if my girlfriend's a female fighter and this 250-pound guy decides he's a woman and that he's a female fighter, and he goes in and bashes her skull, and you know that's when it's not okay with me. So,
yeah, exactly.
But they're pushing this stuff on it on society to where, you know, you can be whatever you want now. You can be a cockroach, you can be a cat, a dog. You know, it's getting insane.
Well, it's getting insane because it's a way it's a technique in a certain sense, and many of my listeners will recognize it as a very old one. It's a kind of Gnosticism. It's making believe that you can alter reality simply by pronouncing a magic formula. Oh, I'm a boy today, I'm a girl today, or whatever. And what it's designed to do in the long run is so unhinge you from reality that you can no longer make any rational decision, because you're not capable anymore of rational analysis of what's going on, because they're changing. Again, it's the process. The more they can accelerate the process, the more confused they make people, and you cannot react quickly enough to their changes. So it's another way of in my opinion, just making people passive and irrational.
Do you think that some sort of uprising is the only answer to this, that we, you know, people taking up arms and charging the Capitol? You know, what do you think could be the possible answer to this?
Well, I think, you know, I think that they are playing with fire. Let's put it that way. Because I think that they are ratcheting up frustration so bad, and they may be doing it deliberately or not, I don't know. But eventually, in these kinds of systems where you are utterly, you're running things in a way that is utterly out of touch with reality, inevitably the normal people just have had enough, and they will fight back at some point. But this is the problem, and I've warned everybody I talked to about this. Whenever you throw those kinds of dice, the best laid plans go right out the window almost immediately. You know, think of Hitler's invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941. It was a well-worked out plan. The logistical part of the plan was calculated precisely, and they were almost victims of their own success in the way, so that Hitler thought he could fundamentally modify the plan and therefore the logistical supply support for the plan at the drop of a hat and change it up completely. And of course, the result was a mess, you know, and thankfully it was a mess. But, you know, anytime you start talking those kinds of dice, lockdowns, martial law, civil war, revolution, no plan survives contact with the enemy. You know, so Mr. Globaloney, think twice. All you militia types, think twice. You know, because it can get out of hand real fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be a very interesting future, to say the least, the next few years, to see what plays out. Now, there's another aspect to this that I try to wrap my head around, and it's the whole occult aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And it's become more evident over the past few years. And, you know, I argue with researchers over, you know, do they really believe in this stuff, or is this just a form of culture creation, or is this they actually really doing rituals? I know the sex trafficking and, you know, satanic, you know, sex rituals. I know that that's real, but these the people at the top, at the very top, do they really believe in this stuff, or are they really, you know, performing these rituals and doing this occult stuff? Because we see on TV, on Netflix, especially the past few years, we've had a massive outbreak of like occult and witchcraft and Satanism normalization and all these shows coming out lately. And it's been pretty obvious agenda that they're trying to kind of like normalize the occult. But my question is why?
Well, the simple answer is that they're afraid of Christ. The complex answer is that I think that many of them start out thinking that this is all just kind of hokum and they're going along with it because it's the trendy thing to do and these other powerful people are into all of this bizarre stuff, so, you know, to be part of the set. But I do think at the top of the power pyramid, and we have to qualify that the top of the power pyramid is the middle managers of the whole picture. But at the top of the power pyramid, humanly speaking, I think that there is a very narrow circle of people that absolutely believe it. And they believe it because, in a certain sense, their magic works. And they've seen it work. This is something I think that at least my own studies have convinced me of, that there's always a certain kind of occult elite somewhere in operation. A good for example for your listeners is to get a hold of two books on the Franklin scandal that rocked the first Shrub White House back in the late 1980s. This was a scandal that erupted in Omaha around the Franklin Savings and Loan Credit Bureau. And it literally did involve children and adolescents that were introduced into kind of a sex magic slavery circle that once you get into it was definitely nationwide. There's two books about it. One is by a senator and attorney for the state of Nebraska that actually was part of the state's investigation of it. And the other is a book by Nick Bryant that I can't remember the titles to either of these two books. One is called The Franklin Cover-Up, and Bryant's book is something else. But when you read the affidavits, what I'm getting at here, when you read the affidavits of the people that were involved in that scandal, it was very clear that they were dealing with people that practiced these rituals, that practiced human sacrifice, and that genuinely believed that these practices gave them some sort of power. And, you know, the leader of this outfit was a powerful and rich man. So there's something to it. And as far as I'm concerned, that Franklin scandal's just the tip of the iceberg. We've had many, many scandals that I think are interconnected if you want to look at them a certain way.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think that once you reach a certain level of power, say in politics, or, I mean, you know, you hear about actors and movie stars having to, you know, go through certain initiations, but I'm talking about really high level politicians or even, you know, businessmen. Do you think that once you reach a certain level that there is inevitable compromisation, that you're going to be introduced to something that you're going to have to make a decision whether you want to participate in?
Yes, I do. I do. One of my friends, Catherine Austin Fitz, talks a lot about control files on politicians. And this, you know, this is an old intelligence agency playbook. You know, this goes back to the early days of the Cheka in the Soviet Union. It goes back to the early days of the Gestapo in the Third Reich, where you would deliberately set up situations where a politician would be compromised in some way, usually a sexual situation, but not always. And, you know, record it and then say, oh, we've got this on you, cooperate, you know, when this vote comes up, and so on and so forth. Another example. The name John Roberts appears in the flight logs of Jeffrey Epstein. Now, we don't know if that's the Supreme Court justice or not, but what we do know was in the crucial Supreme Court vote on Obamacare, at the last minute, he apparently flipped his vote. So in other words, this would be a perfect way to exercise that kind of influence if that story, those two events are connected, and if that's the John Roberts and Epstein's book. Well, I can't imagine Epstein hobnobbing with any other John Roberts, right? You know.
Yeah.
So on and on this goes. So yeah, I do think that some of these people enter into situations and, you know, all of a sudden they're, for whatever reason, they're compromised. They've got some control file on them. Another classic example for me is I've always suspected there's something going on with Senator McCain, and on we go. We could go. It's just, you know, it's sad, but it's the way the swamp operates.
Yeah, that is, that's pretty much my analysis as well. Now we have a few minutes left. I want to get to some of the UFO mania that's been happening lately. In the past few years, we've had the I always mispronounce that thing. Oumuamua. There it is. The supposed alien space.
I have trouble with it too. I don't know anybody who doesn't.
Yes, Oumuamua. And then we had the Tic Tac. Then last year, or was it early this year? I think we had the Israeli space security chief talking about the Galactic Federation. A.V. Loeb says the Oumuamua was a probe. Trump slipping in UFO contingent into the COVID bill. It goes on and on with the UFO stuff the past few years. And I'm wondering, again, why is it now? Are they, you know, is this another preparation? Is it another PSYOP? Or are we going to find out something that's inevitable? You know, I'd like to get your thoughts on this.
Well, part of me says yes, and part of me says no, because, you know, I've been, like I mentioned when we started the talk, you know, I became interested in the subject of UFOs as a boy. And I've been hearing this talk of imminent disclosure and so on you know, right now, what's happening in the ufology field is all of this hoopla over the fact that the New York Times is reporting on these UFO events and not poo-pooing them. Well, this is not new, folks. The New York Times has reported on UFOs and not poo-pooed them going back to the 1970s. This is not new. So, okay, forget about the hysteria for a moment. It's not new. Would the government deliberately leak things in order to prep a narrative? Of course it would. My suspicion is, however, that yes, there has been an uptick in several stories for one reason. And that is now, in the last decade or so, what you're seeing, Chris, is you're seeing all of these stories about going out and commercializing space, mining asteroids, setting up bases on the moon. Well, here's the problem, folks, as I've pointed out over and over again. If you're going to go mine stuff on the moon or mine an asteroid, chemical rockets are not going to be sufficient for the job. You're going to have alternative means of propulsion. And those alternative means of propulsion are likely to be rather exotic. So to me, if you're planning on going out and commercializing space, here's another problem. If there is somebody out there, are we stepping on their toes? Are we getting involved in their business? And again, I suspect the answer to that is yes. Hence, and I've said this before, hence the reason that we have always put on our space probe plaques little announcements like, we're coming in peace for all mankind. Well, who are we making that announcement to and why? Okay. So, yeah, I suspect they're prepping a narrative. Could they fake such an event? Sure they could. Would they be capable of faking such an event if it suited their purposes? Sure they could. So, you know, I'm both skeptical and a jaundiced believer, if you want to put it that way, because I think Mr. Globalone quite literally is capable of anything. These are narcissist psychopaths we're dealing with.
Now, do you think that there are factions that actually have technology or reverse engineered technology that is capable of doing this already? Is most of the stuff we see in the sky them, if the answer is yes?
I do think that we have technological secrets that probably far exceed what we can imagine. Everything that I've run across in the literature says we do. My problem is an epistemological one. My problem is that every human advance or ingenuity of that nature has to be explained by crashed and retrieved vehicles. I make the joke that if this is what has been the root of all of this exotic technology that people speculate that humanity possesses, then pretty soon we're going to have to start crashing our stuff on ET's homeworld so that they can catch back up with this. In other words, this is an explanation that goes nowhere. I prefer to look at what is in the scientific papers themselves and what are their implications. Well, when you look at things that way, you can find some astonishing stuff going all the way back to the period between the two world wars, you know, and this is humans talking about this stuff. And it's not reliant on this business. Oh, the Nazis recovered a UFO or re-recovered a UFO. Just look at the engineering papers and what some of these scientists and technicians and engineers were up to and extrapolate from there. And when you do, it's rather astonishing.
Now, what do you think when it comes to the actual abduction phenomenon and people's accounts that are extremely similar, you know, the mm-hmm. gray ETs with the big eyes, mm-hmm. being strapped to a table, having experiments done, mm-hmm. possibly, you know, with fertility or eggs mm-hmm. or DNA or something like that. And mm-hmm. all these people have similar accounts. Do you think that there is something to this, or is it maybe some kind of government black project? Or do you think that people are really being taken by something that's off this planet?
Well, let's put it this way. Number one, I don't disbelieve abductees. Number two, could they be taken by people off this planet? Yeah, maybe. But number three, let's look at the grays. To me, the grays, if they exist, would be a much more appropriate response to conditions where people are living underground all the time. So in other words, are we really looking at people off this world, or are we looking at creatures from right here? I don't know. Are we looking at military psyops of some sort? Again, there's evidence for that. And most peculiarly, Dr. Vallée, Jacques Vallée, Passport to Magonia, I think was the book where he outlined this hypothesis. He just compared a bunch of abduction stories, just accepted them at face value for what they were, with all of those stories from the Middle Ages of incubuses and succubuses and middle of the night abductions and, you know, weird sexual experiments and so on and so forth. So in other words, even that part of the narrative is not really that new. So what are we looking at? I don't know. I do suspect the one thing I am very suspicious of is that when you look at the stories of mythology from, you know, the Chimalpopoca of the Aztecs to the Popol Vuh and the Vedic literature, the Bible, the Babylonian texts and so on, they all seem to indicate that somebody was here long ago doing something, you know. And the odd thing is they look like us in many instances, talk like us, you know, and so on and so forth. In some cases, they don't. So I look at it that we're looking at a phenomenon with abduction that may be very, very old and that has been going on for a very long time.
And what about the possibility that there is other realities just beyond the spectrum of our vision with life, you know, living organisms mm-hmm, sure. all teeming around us mm-hmm. at all times, you know, intelligent entities that we could communicate with under certain circumstances, and they have the ability to phase in and out of our reality.
Oh, I don't have any difficulty with that at all. I mean, read the descriptions of angels in the Bible. You know, clearly you're dealing with something that materializes or can take on a physical manifestation. You've got similar traditions in Islam. You've got all of those traditions in Judaism. You've got the Vedas. You know, pretty much every old tradition on the planet has some version of this. I don't have any problem with it. And let's go a little bit further. The Egyptians, of course, had the idea that stars were somehow alive. They were kind of a meta life. Well, in the 50s, there was a famous plasma physicist by the name of David Bohm, very well-known man in standard physics. This was his bag, plasma physics. And he suddenly quit all of his plasma experiments because he had concluded that plasmas, you know, the sun is what? It's a big ball of plasma, you know, lightning during a thunderstorm, you know, it's nothing but a plasma. Well, he had come to the conclusion that plasmas exhibited 4 out of the 5 signs of life, including the ability to self-organize, you know, so all of a sudden he just quit because he didn't want to be playing around with this stuff anymore because we don't really know what we're doing. So, yeah, you know, I have no problem believing in non-corporeal immaterial life forms. I have no problem believing that there may be life forms that inhabit parts of the electromagnetic spectrum that human eyes cannot see. If you have a pet animal, you know, cats or dogs, or even sometimes birds, you know, they'll react to things that, you know, you wonder, what in the name of sense are they reacting to?
I was looking at my cat earlier wondering, what the hell are you looking at?
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? The bottom line for me, Chris, is I just don't believe in this nice Cartesian, Newtonian, mechanized universe that is all material. You know, I'm not a materialist. I'll just say it right up front. I'm not a materialist in terms of my philosophy.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that. And Dr. Farrell, there is so much stuff we could talk about. This has been a fascinating conversation. I'd love to have you back on the future to discuss some more topics.
Sure, that's fine.
That's
just
awesome.
Let me know when. Just send me an email.
I will, definitely. And yes, that was fascinating stuff. And till next time, everyone else, have an excellent evening. Thank you, Dr. Farrell.
Thank you for having me on, Chris.